I'm Jonathan Moore.
And I'm Colin Lamb.
And you're listening to
Red Coverage, V2's own American football podcast.
Hi, and welcome along to this week's press coverage on V2, the fastest growing American football podcast in the UK. We've got a top show in prospect tonight as we look ahead to what the 2013 college football season has in store. I have returned after my week away, and thankfully Colin is also here, as always, to keep me in check and also to bring in tonight's guest.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, as usual, we always like to focus on the college season. Obviously, we've got some great games and great players to look forward to watching this season, but sometimes we need a little bit of expertise, and for that, we are joined by a scout named Tom Melton. He was actually just in Scotland this past week, so hopefully he feels at home again speaking to us, and we're delighted to be joined by him. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on,
man. No, man, it's really cool, yeah. Any excuse to talk about football, really. So, yeah, I mean, we might as well get started. The draft is, well, almost 2 months now, isn't it? Almost 2 months old. So how is your scouting going right now? Are you still watching some film, keeping up on the prospects?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, my laptop is broken right now, but when my laptop is working, I've been watching film, getting ready, mostly seniors so far for the 2014 class. But, you know, it's hard to take your eye off some of those juniors like Teddy Bridgewater and Jadeveon Clowney when you're watching them.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's so many top prospects to sort of watch out for. Are there any guys in particular, seniors for the 2014 draft, any guys that immediately stand out to you?
One guy who's become very popular on Twitter, at least, is Jeff Matthews from Cornell. My friend Emery Hunt over at Football Game Plan turned me on to him last year, probably a month or so after sometime last year at least, and we talked about him when we were at the All-Star Games down in Florida and Alabama, and so I've had an eye on him for a while, but he's definitely one of my favorite senior quarterbacks. Then my friend Ben Albright from NFL Draft Monster on Twitter, he turned me on to David Fales, the quarterback from San Jose State, and I really like him too. So those are two of my favorite senior quarterback prospects. I like Carlos Hyde from Ohio State at running back. I really like Cody Hoffman, the wide receiver from BYU, and Noel Grigsby, the wide receiver from San Jose State at wide receiver. I can keep going. Yeah, I don't know if you guys want to just ramble.
No, that's cool. I mean, David Fales, me and Jonathan actually spoke to David around, it must have been quite a few months ago now, actually. And at that point, I think David Fales was just starting to garner some hype. He's actually been talked about as a first-round prospect. Can you see David Fales as a kind of top guy?
It's hard to say that before the season. I think I had him number two on my quarterback rankings that I made preseason. I think he could be a first-round guy without a doubt. But obviously, he's got a whole year of football left to play, and a lot of things can happen between now and the draft, as we all know. So I think he's definitely got the skill set to be a good NFL starter. So I see no reason why he couldn't end up in the first round. And I'm not sure if he'll be a top guy like Teddy Bridgewater might be projected right now, but I think he could go in the first round right now.
Yeah, I mean, sticking to the subject of quarterbacks, I mean, there's going to be so many top-class quarterbacks going into the draft next year. I mean, we've got guys like Taj Boyd of Clemson, who we spoke to also a few weeks ago. We've got David Fales, Teddy Bridgewater, you've mentioned, and, of course, Johnny Football, who looks likely to also declare. If you were to be put on the spot, at this stage, who do you currently class as the top quarterback in all of college football?
A top quarterback prospect right now, I'd have to say Bridgewater. Not to scout and, you know, base an opinion off of one game, but he really impressed me against Florida. I thought they were going to beat Louisville pretty handily, and he did a fantastic job in that game, so I was very impressed with that. Obviously, I've seen him play a few other times, but seeing him go up against one of the best teams in the SEC, a very good defense, was really impressive to me. But I really like David Fales. I like Tosh Boyd, too. He's kind of cooled off on Twitter for some
Yeah, and I mean, another quarterback of note is Virginia Tech's Logan Thomas, and he had, well, you can say an indifferent season at least last year in 2012, which included 16 interceptions. But he has one more year to truly prove himself before heading on to the draft. Where do you rank Thomas alongside the guys like Boyd and Bridgewater, and do you think he has it in him to have a top season?
I think he could definitely have a productive season. I remember watching him during his first season as a starter, and I definitely thought he had upside. And I mean, how can he not? He's 6'6 with a rocket arm, being athletic. But it seems like he was a pretty smart kid and very coachable. So I definitely thought that he had the potential to really boost his stock last year, and I thought that he was going to. But he really seemed to regress last year. His mechanics weren't very good. His footwork was sloppy, poor decision-making and all that, which is partially the reason that he threw 16 interceptions. I think that he still has that potential to be a very good quarterback, but there's just a lot of things that he needs to kind of either correct or improve on. He's going to get to that level. So we'll see what happens, but I'm a little skeptical right now. I think I had him in my top 10 still, but it was towards the bottom of it. He was definitely not in the top 5 or anything. But he's got a lot of upside, so you can't completely write him off. And I know he's working with George Whitfield, so, and he raves about how coachable he is and how smart he is. So hopefully he can get some of his mechanics straightened out.
Yeah, and obviously with Logan Thomas, can you see any comparisons to EJ Manuel? Obviously, EJ, another big athletic guy who has a huge arm. Do you think that's a favourable comparison for Logan Thomas?
Not necessarily. I think EJ Manuel, I mean, Logan Thomas was recruited as a tight end. I think I don't follow recruiting as closely as maybe I should, but I'm pretty sure EJ Manuel was recruited as a quarterback. Logan Thomas, they just said, wow, this kid's got a super strong arm, let's try to make him a quarterback. So I think that is a big distinction, because EJ Manuel has been training as a quarterback and practicing as a quarterback for a long time. Logan Thomas, you know, he's kind of a developmental guy more than EJ Manuel is. And I'm not a huge EJ Manuel fan either. I thought his accuracy was really consistent, his decision making was inconsistent. But obviously they're both very big, you know, powerful quarterbacks, very, very good athletes, and they do have strong arms, can make all the throws. I question the accuracy with both of them and the decision making with both of them, but, you know, EJ Manuel did just go number 16 overall, so I suppose anything's possible.
Yeah, obviously, I know we're past the draft now, and we never had a chance to talk to you about the 2013 draft, but if you think EJ Manuel maybe isn't always made out to be, who did you have ranked as the best quarterback for the draft class just a few months ago?
Well, contrary to popular belief, I did not think Matt Barkley was one of the first ones, so it did not really surprise me when he slipped all the way down. I didn't really like EJ Manuel, and I sound kind of, you know, picky about all that. Geno Smith was one of my top guys. I really liked Geno Smith. And I really liked Tyler Wilson from Arkansas. I was surprised that he slipped all the way to the fourth round, though. I imagine that had something to do with his down senior season and his concussion history. But I really think Tyler Wilson still has the potential to be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. I think the Raiders might have gotten a steal with him in the fourth round. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully...
I
think the rumours are, I saw some rumours online that the Raiders actually targeted Matt Barkley. I'm not sure if that's true, but it seems sort of strange the fact they never pulled the trigger on him. The fact he went for, obviously, as you see, Wilson instead. But I think the Raiders, it's definitely going to be a rebuilding season, so I'm not sure it matters who is playing quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. They have a lot of work to do as far as rebuilding their roster. But I will say, I think Rich McKenzie's done a great job trimming some of the fat from that team and kind of cutting a lot of stuff off and, you know, cleaning the cupboard out and fixing the salary cap and getting their whole team in order. So I think he's doing a good job so far, because he did not have a good situation. But if he can get a surprise with Wilson, I think he's going to give Matt Flynn a run for his money in training camp. Then I think that would speed up the rebuilding process
Yeah, I mean, that could be an interesting decision they might have to make, obviously, if Wilson plays, depending on how he performs. If the Raiders, as expected, have a top 5 pick next season, it'd be interesting if they stick with Wilson, or if maybe they're picking number one, would they go for Bridgewater? I think that'll be one of the interesting stories to watch out for.
Yeah, I think they would probably still go, and like, you know, you'd have to pick between Bridgewater and Clowney, and God, that is just a tough call. But I think that if you have a quarterback that plays pretty well as a fourth round pick, but if you think Bridgewater's a franchise guy, then you pick him. But you know, obviously that is a very hypothetical situation.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would still pick Bridgewater if I needed a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and how highly do you rank Jadeveon Clowney? Obviously, you just mentioned his name. He is considered the favourite, along with Bridgewater, as the next number one pick overall. Is he the top guy you've ever scouted?
I think so. He is just an unbelievable football player. I mean, he is just on a whole other level as far as, you know, instincts. He's got such a great get-off. He's so fast. Flexible, he's so strong. His hand usage has really improved over the 2 years he's been at South Carolina. He's got a good motor, and it's just terrifying. Like he's got, like, if you're gonna, you know, like if he went into NCAA football or Madden 2013 or 2014 and made a defensive end, it's pretty much Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, he is just a freak. So, unless he gets hurt or, you know, kills someone like Aaron Hernandez, I think he's going in the first couple picks of the draft.
And just before we move away from altogether from the 2013 draft, are there any players that maybe went in a later round or didn't receive as much attention at the time that you scouted that you think could make an immediate breakthrough in the NFL and impress right away?
Well, one guy that I was surprised that went as late as he did was Michael Buchanan from Illinois. I liked what I saw from him when he was a junior, and Whitney Merciless was considered the better prospect. I really liked what Buchanan brought to the table, but then he kind of broke his jaw, and he didn't really have the senior season that everyone thought he was going to. And, you know, for whatever reasons, he fell in the seventh round, and the Patriots picked him up. I really think that he has a bit more upside than just a seventh-round pick. So I think that he could be a guy that surprises me. He has his head on straight and whatnot. But he was one of my favorite guys that slipped. So, and obviously Tyler Wilson. You know, I don't think he should have gone the fourth round at all. But, you know, that's just my opinion, obviously.
Cool. Well, we'll see where those guys go. Now, getting back to the college football, another point that you mentioned was about DeAndre Hopkins no longer being at Clemson. How much do you see Clemson and Taj Boyd relying solely on Sammy Watkins this season, with Hopkins no longer being there? And do you ultimately see Watkins as a top half first rounder in 2014?
I think they'll definitely rely on Watkins more than they did last year. Because if you remember last year, Watkins was suspended at the beginning of the year, and so then they had to rely on Hopkins. And Hopkins just blew up and was just dominating, and, you know, Sammy Watkins reintegrated and wasn't, like, the main guy, necessarily. Now he'll be the main guy again, but they still have a lot of talent at wide receiver. Sherrod Pekins, a very talented guy. You know, I remember when I was doing my prospect preview for them last year, I could not believe the size and speed of some of the receivers that they had on this team. So they've definitely got talent at receiver still, and I think they'll probably be fine from a passing type standpoint. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do at running back yet without Ellington, but I don't know their depth chart as well as they should. But they'll definitely rely on him as their go-to guy, and I think there's no question Sammy Watkins is a first-round pick in my opinion, as long as he stays out of trouble in the beginning. I don't really consider the trouble that he got in that serious anyway. It's going to be between him and Marquise Lee for the number one receiver spot on my board pretty much the entire year. I love Marquise Lee. But Sammy Watkins is an extremely rare talent also, so I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if they both ended up in the top 10 or 15 picks come April or May, whenever they have the draft in 2014.
And a more general question, perhaps, and also on the subject of Clemson, do you think it will be them or Florida State that finish top of that conference?
That is an interesting question. Right now, I'd probably lean towards Florida State, but I think Clemson still has a lot of talent on offense. I just don't quite trust their defense at this point.
Yeah, well, one interesting point, and I suppose it involves Clemson too. I think the opening game of the upcoming college football season involves Clemson and Georgia. What do you expect from Georgia? Obviously, they lost some really, really good talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Guys like Bakari Rambo, Alec Ogletree, John Jenkins. I mean, what are you expecting from Georgia this year?
That is interesting. Obviously, they're in the SEC, so it's going to be tough. I still trust them with Aaron Murray to get the job done on the offensive side of the ball. They lost a lot of talent on defense. I wasn't a huge Jarvis Jones fan, but he was still very productive there, and I still thought he was worth a second-round pick. I just wasn't crazy about him in the first round. They're going to have to replace a lot of talent on that side of the ball, but I still think that they should be competitive. I don't think they'll necessarily be back in the SEC championship game like they were last year. But I think that they can be a competitive team, and I don't think they're going to get blown out by any means. But, God, that is a tough game to pick right now between Georgia and Clemson. I might lean towards Georgia right now, but don't quote me on that.
No, we won't. I mean, I think everyone will be looking forward to that game. I can't remember. I've only been watching college football for maybe a few years, but I can't remember an opening day game quite. I think it will have big implications on the season for both teams, so it's quite unusual to have that. But so can I ask, yeah, Ben, would you say Bama? Can you see past Bama for another national championship, or do you have another team that you have on your radar you think might shock people?
Well, it's hard to write them off because, it seems every year they lose all this talent, and then somehow they have a better prospect pop up in the same position as the guy who just left. And they still have a ton of talent on defense, and that's their calling card. And obviously, as McCarron coming back for his third year as a starter, as a senior, after already having won two national titles. And they've got T.J. Yeldon at running back, who's just spectacular. They've got Amari Cooper at receiver, who, if he was eligible for the draft, would be right up there with Mark Easley and Sammy Watkins on my draft board. Maybe even above them, honestly. He is an unbelievable receiver. And they've still got plenty of talent on their offensive line, even after they lost Chance Womack and T.J. Fluker and Barrett Jones. So it's hard to pick against Bama because they are just such a good team. I really like what Oregon's got going. I was a little skeptical about Marcus Mariota last year, but he played really, really well, and how can you not like watching DeAnthony Thomas? I like Josh Huff on offense for them as a receiver, and they've got a surprising amount of talent on defense, and so I do like Oregon, and I think they're probably the favorites in the Pac-12. Ohio State is going to be up there in the top 5 or 10 this year, but it'll be interesting to see if Braxton Miller passes well enough for them to win games against good defenses if they can keep them in the pocket. But, those are probably three of my favorite teams at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the talent on the defensive side of the ball for Oregon. The Ducks, as you say, have some good players. And one guy that, to be honest, was not in my radar, so I'm not sure if you know much about him, but it's a cornerback called Ife Ekpre-Olomu. I think that's it, Ekpre-Olomu. Do you know much about him?
Yes.
And do you think he's pretty good?
I have not scouted him yet, but I did notice him when I was watching him live, when I was watching Oregon games live last year, and I was like, who the heck is that kid? He is definitely one of the top corner prospects that I need to watch. I haven't watched him yet, but a lot of people are talking about him, and I definitely need to catch up on his film, because he is a very talented kid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't proclaim to be an expert like yourself, but at the same time, I watched him against USC, and obviously Marquise Lee, I think that's as tough a matchup as you can get, and I think when you watched him, I think if he goes to the NFL and plays the way he does now, he will be flagged every play, but he's still very, very good. And I think the other Oregon guy that I had never heard of was Colt Lierla, the tight end. I'm not quite sure how highly ranked he'll be. Do you know much about Colt Lierla?
Yes, he is going to be one of the better tight end prospects this year, I believe. I think he's a junior, if I remember correctly, and he is just a physical freak. I can't remember exactly how tall it was, but there's a video of him jumping like 40 or 45 or something ridiculous inches on top of like standing blocks. So he just goes from a standing jump on like four or five feet in the air. It's just absolutely ridiculous. He is a freak, and I don't know if he'll go first round necessarily, but I haven't scouted him yet either, so maybe I shouldn't talk too much about it. But he's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, so I think Austin Seferian Jenkins, the Washington tight end, do you have him? Most people seem to rank him as potentially a top 20 pick. Is that your sort of mindset? He's the top tight end in college football?
I would say so. He just reminds me so much of Tony Gonzalez. He may not be, the Vernon Davis type freak athlete that Colt Wyerla is, but he is just... I just really don't know how to explain it. He just reminds me so much of Tony Gonzalez. I think he's going to be a very good tight end in the NFL if he keeps himself out of trouble and stops getting DUIs. So.
Yeah, and we were talking about Alabama there a minute ago, and I really only wanted to ask this question so I could say this guy's name, who is Haha Clinton Dix. I mean, where did that come from? But do you see him being the difference maker for the Alabama secondary this year? And in the long run, do you think he could be the next breakout star from Alabama?
Absolutely. First of all, I love his name. It is just amazing. I noticed him every single time I watch Alabama. I mean, he's just all over the place. He's got good ball skills. I don't know that much about him as far as an intelligence or football IQ standpoint, since I haven't really looked into him, but I really like what he's been able to do, and I believe last year was his first year as a starter, and he really impressed me. So he's still pretty young, he still has room to grow, obviously, but the interception he made, I think it was either against Georgia or another game, but it was just unbelievable. He's definitely got a lot of upside, and he's one of my favorite players, both for his name and his ball skills.
Yeah, and sticking to the safety position, one of my favourite players on that side of the ball is Stanford's Ed Reynolds, a player who we will see in the draft. He had a great outing last season. I mean, he landed the most interceptions for a Stanford player since 1973. How highly do you rate Reynolds, and where do you put him in terms of ranking him alongside the other top safeties in college football at the moment?
Honestly, I am not scouting him at all, so I should probably not try and rank him or whatever. But I really haven't watched him very much, to be perfectly honest. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be that.
Obviously, you've not scouted him much. So, other than Clinton Dix, who, in your opinion, are the top safeties in college football at the moment?
Okay. Quick last one from LSU is a guy that I've liked some of what I've seen. I haven't watched a lot of him, but just from seeing him live when I was scouting other players like Kevin Winter and what TV's been doing, whatever he stuck out last year. I really like Ty Zimmerman for Kansas State. I might like him more than anyone else, but maybe that's just me. But I think he's very smooth and covered in French. I think he's got great ball skills. I think he's very intelligent, and I think he's going to be have a very long career at the starting safety and not a foul. So he's definitely one of my favorites, my personal favorites, at the position.
But yeah, my next question for you is quite simple, really. Obviously, one of the position groups that stood out in this year's draft was the offensive line. Are there any position groups in particular for next year that you think will be sort of very, very good?
Sorry, could you repeat that one more time? You cut out.
Yeah, no problem. Obviously, this year, in particular for the 2013 draft, the offensive line prospects and also the cornerback prospects in particular stood out as the sort of best position groups. Are there any position groups in particular that you think will have a really good standing in next year's draft?
That's interesting. I like some of the receivers that are coming out this year. I don't think it'll be nearly as deep as it was at receiver this year. I think there's more weak talent at the top than there was this year. It might be a little too early for me to say that there's one really strong position group, because the last draft had a lot of strong position groups, as far as pass rusher or corner or receiver. And obviously, there are three offensive linemen all over the top picks. So, I can't pinpoint one right now, but I'm sure that'll work itself
questionable. That's cool. And obviously, one guy that was put into quite an awkward position, I suppose, was Dee Milliner, obviously the former Alabama cornerback, now with the New York Jets. The top guy, and I've only seen him a few times, but the Ohio State cornerback, Bradley Roby, everyone says he should be a top 10 pick. Have you watched him at all? And how good do you think he can be?
I think he can be very, very good. I think he could have come out this year and been a top 15 pick to the perfect analysis. He's got great ball skills. He can play man coverage or run coverage. He's a pretty good tackler, and he's not afraid to get his hands dirty in the run game. I love that kid. And, you know, I've been with an Ohio State fan, and I've worked with a couple of Ohio State fans. They just love that kid, and they're really happy to have him back this year. I'm sure everyone is, too. I think he is just going to, I think he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks drafted, if not the first one of the 2014 draft.
Now, BYU, they only have 4 defensive players returning from last season's successful team. And that defense for BYU was almost, if not more, important than their quarterback for them last season. However, they have something that other teams don't, and that is, of course, Kyle Van Noy. Do you think the BYU defense, with Van Noy still there, still have enough to repeat its form of last season? And what players do you expect to step up this year in the BYU defense?
It's going to be tough. I mean, Tookie Ounce is a very talented kid, so replacing him is it's almost impossible. I'm not sure they're going to be able to repeat what they did last year, but I love Kyle Van Noy. I was all over him last year. I really liked him even before the start of last season. I gave my friend Justin Higgin, put him in his BYU preview because we didn't let him in there. I said, you need to go back and watch this kid and put him in the preview because he's very good. And obviously, he was just dominant at the end of the year last year as far as production and whatever things concerned. I love Kyle Van Noy. He's a huge, huge Kyle Van Noy fan. So I really think he's going to stand out. As far as some of the other guys, I really haven't scouted anyone else on the BYU defense. But I will say Kyle Van Noy is one of my favorites.
And Kyle Van Noy's best mate, that is Ziggy Ansah, of course. I mean, the term rookie in the NFL has never seemed more appropriate than for a player than Ziggy Ansah. I mean, maybe it's a bit of a risky pick for Detroit. I mean, he's clearly got talent, but he is still very raw. How well do you expect him to do in his first year in the NFL?
Well, I thought top 5 was a little rich for Ziggy, but yeah, I don't think he's going to be a 10-7 a year pass rusher, so I thought that was a little high, but in the top 20, I probably would have jumped all over him, but, you know, that's just my opinion, obviously. But, you know, playing next to Nick Fairley and Hopkins Sue, I think it's going to ease the transition a little bit from him, and I think, you know, obviously they don't play the same positions, but BYU moved him around from outside linebacker to defensive end to inside and defensive tackle, which is obviously not a natural fit. But I think that he'll be able to be coached up pretty effectively there. And, you know, I think Sue and Fairley might be able to speed up his development process a little bit. And they're going to take some pressure off of him because he's not going to drop. I don't think he'll drop on the team all year playing next to those guys. So, obviously, they have to replace Clint Averill and, you know, obviously Kyle Vanderbosch is gone. But I think that he can have a chance to be a solid rookie. I don't think he's going to, you know, like the
world
on fire or anything, but I think he's
going to
have a good solid
move. Well, overall, obviously, you mentioned Ntamukong Suh, you mentioned Nick Fairley. What do you think about the defensive tackles in college football this upcoming season? Do any players in particular stand out? I mean, one of my guys I'm sort of hoping that, you know, ends up on a team that I like is Louis Nix at Burks, Notre Dame nose tackle, but is he someone that stands out to you, and are there any other DTs that look good?
I'm glad you brought up Nick, because he is probably my favorite defensive tackle in the entire class. He's thinking from a DJ Roger comparison, but I think that might be working. They're both very short, powerful, quick. So that's going to be interesting to see if there's such a lot of comparison this year. But Daniel McCullers from Tennessee is another grab that a lot of people are talking about. I'm not quite as sold on him yet, but he is just a monster. He's 6'6", 370
anything about Rashid Gateman. As I say, the Gophers defensive tackle, I believe he's got some character concerns. I think he might be a slightly overage prospect, but do you know anything about him?
Yes, he's probably 6'5", 6'6", 210 pounds. Very good athlete. He might be a better fit as a 3-4 defensive end than as a 4-3 defensive tackle, but I think he's capable of both. He's probably the best prospect on the entire Gophers team, both this year and last year. He's got a lot of upside. It's just a question of whether he continues to develop his technique, keep his pads low. But he's definitely got a lot of intriguing potential, so I hope he does get an interview with him because I would love to listen to him.
Yeah, we hope so too. I mentioned that, to be honest, we had to sort of forget about it for a while after we started we spoke to Stevie Brown, the Giants safety, and after that we focused on the NFL, but we definitely want to get back to college, so yeah, I think for the next little while I'll have to go on that. It's easy to say, but I'll have to be bothered to do it, but I will. But yeah, obviously one of the things that sort of stands out to me about this college season, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm being wrong, but LSU do not seem the same powerhouse that you usually expect them to be. I mean, do you think LSU, do you expect them to compete in the SEC as they always do, or do you think that they will suffer, obviously, a drop-off in performance because of the loss of talent?
I think there's going to be a bit of a drop-off. I don't think they're going to go 2-10 or anything like that, but they lost a lot of talent on defense. They're still returning some, obviously, but they lost. They obviously don't have two Tyler Matthews, Errol Simon, Martinez Mingo, there's even more. Montgomery, Kevin Linger, they just lost so much talent, especially along the defensive line. I can't remember what the defensive tackle's name right now. But they just lost so much talent on defense, and that's always been the calling card. And, I was not too impressed with Zach Bettenberger last year. I had high expectations for him coming into the year, but he was a pretty significant letdown last year. It'll be interesting to see if he can progress the way a lot of people thought he could last year. And they obviously lost some talent on the offensive side of the ball, too. But I don't think they're going to win their conference. I don't think they're going to go to the conference. So this team, but I think they'll still be a 7-0 team. I think they've got enough talent for that.
Yeah, and I think the toughest question I have for you, what do you think is a cooler name, Barkevious Mingo or Ha Ha Clinton Dix? They're both amazing names.
I'd say Ha Ha Clinton Dix. I think Barkevious Mingo is a hilarious name. I think the funniest tweet I saw during the draft since last year was saying, I think we should vote and change the Barkevious Mingo's name, switch the B and the M around since Barkevious Mingo. That would be my favorite name. Barkevious Mingo. That's just a little but I'll stick with Ha Ha Clinton Dix. That's my favorite name.
Yeah, I mean, one of the less flashy positions in American football is an offensive guard. And I mean, our first ever interview guest on the show was Georgia's Chris Burnett. Out of interest, have you scouted Chris Burnett at all? And what do you think of him as a player? And what do you see in store for him in the future? And just to more open it out more generally, are there any guards that you think we should look out for in 2013?
Unfortunately, I have not scouted him. He's on my list to scout, but obviously I haven't been doing a ton of that since I can't get on my laptop. As far as guards that I think that we should keep an eye out for, I don't think there's anybody quite as talented as Jonathan Cooper as far as being able to move and pull. He's just a fantastic athlete for an offensive guard, but I do really like Cyril Richardson from Baylor and Dave Jackson from Mississippi State. The tell us what's going to happen, but I don't have a watch to watch.
And I'm now going to switch randomly from talking about guards to running backs, as you do. And one of my favourite running backs is Arizona's Kadeem Carey. And he had a fantastic season last year. I mean, he led the nation in rushing with nearly 2,000 yards, 23 touchdowns as well, 36 receptions. Have you scouted Carey at all, and how highly do you rank him as a running back?
I haven't scouted him necessarily. I saw a couple of Arizona games last year, and he impressed me, obviously. He's kind of a running back size, and obviously all the athletic ability that you need, because he had a fantastic year last year. He's got to be in my top five running backs, based off what I've seen so far. But I do prefer Lashley Strunk at this point. I really like James Wilder and Tommy Freeman from Florida State. I don't know if running back is the right way to describe DeAnthony Thomas yet, since he's kind of a running back slash wide receiver slash return man slash fan. But it's hard to not like him. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily rank Storm Johnson over to Dean Carey at this point, but Storm Johnson is a guy that I think would be a surprise to people if you see him this year.
I think you said J.C. Strunk on Baylor is a good player, because I actually put a bet on him to win the Heisman Trophy, because he guaranteed it himself, so I have to believe C. Strunk.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a chance, and he was extremely productive when they started giving him some touches late last year, so he needs to clean some things up for this game, but he's got all the talent to be the Heisman Trophy winner and to be a first-round draft pick, so I'll definitely think it's possible to make it over.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned LaMichael James. Who do you think compares to LaMichael James in the NFL? I mean, or something, I'm saying LaMichael James, sorry, DeAnthony Thomas. Who do you think compares to DeAnthony Thomas? Is it Tavon Austin? Is it maybe someone else? Or can you think of any valid comparisons?
Honestly, no. I don't think so. Tavon Austin is a similar talent, but, you know, they're not the exact same player, but they're both so explosive. Honestly, not really. I mean, he's just so fast. He's just so dang fast. I can't really think of an apt comparison for him. But, you know, the Jaguars are calling DeMar Robinson just an offensive weapon, and I think that might be a very good way to try to grow out to Anthony Thomas.
I think the Jaguars drafted, obviously, Denard Robinson, but also drafted Ace Sanders from South Carolina. So hopefully the Jaguars, considering they'll be playing in the UK for the next 4 years, hopefully they'll get a little bit more exciting to watch.
Well, we'll see if they can pan out. It's at some point, you know, having those guys will kind of look. I guess Ace Sanders is more of a prototypical slot guy. Denard Robinson is just kind of a bluffy. Kind of a little drop issues when he was out the Super Bowl, so it'll be interesting to see how they get the ball in those hands without, you know, disrupting how that happens.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you have Maurice Jones-Drew, I suppose you'll have to throw the ball around much if he's healthy.
Yeah, not necessarily, but, you know, at some point you've got to. We'll see what happens, but I did like Blaine Gabbert coming out, so I can't rag on him too hard. So, well, Blaine Gabbert doesn't come about, I was just as wrong with both.
So you actually saw him as a potential, obviously he was hyped potentially as a number one overall pick. Was that something you thought was possible?
I definitely thought he, deserved top 10, top 15 consideration. I didn't necessarily think he should go number one overall, but I did like him. I thought he had a lot of upside, even though he had some issues that have, persisted in the NFL, such as leaving the pass a little bit, not necessarily taking a hit or whatever, but I thought he might be able to correct those a little bit, but, you know, you learn and you learn, so, so far that hasn't happened.
Well, he's still got another year to prove himself by the looks of things, so he might still be right yet.
We'll see about that. I don't think I'm holding my breath on that one, but
you never know.
Well, that's true.
Cool. And just my last question for you. I mean, we've obviously mentioned the game between Clemson and Georgia. There's going to be so many big games over the course of the season. Another one, Michigan versus Ohio State. I mean, as a scout, you obviously want to be watching the best players. So what games in particular are you most looking forward to seeing in the 2013 season?
Gosh. Without having the schedule in front of me, I believe, doesn't Texas A&M play South Carolina this year? Am I mistaken on that one?
Yeah, I think they do.
If so, watching Jake Matthews against Sadiq and Clowney is just going to be fantastic. You know, because Jake Matthews is my number one offensive tackle prospect, and Sadiq and Clowney is probably my number one prospect overall. So, seeing those guys play each other would be very, very interesting. And I don't know if it's week one of that week. I can't remember. Hang on, I'm going to look this up quick in my book. But I'm pretty sure they do. And if they do, that is going to be very, very fun to watch.
Yes, I mean, my final question, I suppose it's quite generic. You might have answers for it, you might not. If you had to predict the national championship winners and also the Heisman Trophy winner for the 2013-14 season, who are you guessing it's going to be?
I would say, I guess I'll go with boring answer and say Alabama for national champion. But I think it would be a very fun game to watch Oregon and Alabama. That was what I was hoping for this year. But, you could say Johnny Manziel, but I don't know if Rex seems strong just because I think that, you know, I think he's going to get a lot of carries this year. I think he's got a shot at 1,800 yards and a lot of touchdowns. I think he's going to get a lot of touches of Baylor. So I'll go with Rex.
Yeah, if that's the case, you have just won me quite a bit of money.
Well, you know what? I'm glad I could chime in for all of that. And for what it's worth, I don't think South Carolina is Texas A&M going to play.
I don't know.
I'm looking at the schedule, and it doesn't look like it, so I must have seen it.
Oh, well, it's any point.
I thought they were looking at making an annual game between them, but there you go.
Yep, unfortunately, maybe they'll play in the conference championship game or something.
Well, I think that's
really all I can. That's too bad. Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to make sure though. Wait, did I go on that?
No, obviously, to be honest, I just agreed with you because it sounded right, so. That's pretty much what we do, but obviously, just once again, thanks a lot for joining us on the show, and hopefully the technical difficulties won't ruin the quality of the show too much, because my laptop is so terrible, but thanks a lot, and we'll get you on again sometime, and we can talk even more when you have scouted everyone, as usual.
Exactly. That sounds good to me, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks a lot, Tom. That was brilliant. Cheers.
So Jonathan, obviously we just had a great chat with Tom Melting about the upcoming college season, some of the top prospects to look out for, but of course we can't forget about the major headlines of the day, or I suppose of the week, the NFL, and unfortunately there's no other place to start than the sad news that Aaron Hernandez has been charged with first degree murder, I believe. Obviously he's a star player in the NFL for the New England Patriots, and he's now been released immediately after the news broke, I think it's in fact been that day or the next day. So obviously the Patriots have acted very quickly, but what do you think about that impact on the NFL and the Patriots?
Yeah, well, obviously, as he said there, he's been charged with first-degree murder, but we obviously need to watch what we say here, because we don't want to get into any legal trouble ourselves. But, I mean, when it broke, it sort of broke the week before. I mean, the police were sort of hovering around his house, and cameras were following him, media people. He started to pick up that something wasn't right, but even then, not for a second did I think, oh, this is what's going on. So, I mean, I was really shocked when the story broke that he'd been arrested for it, because it beggars belief that an athlete of this calibre, this level, a Pro Bowl player, in one of the biggest sports in the world in front of millions of people on television every week would, with all the money in the world, would go and do something like this. But, I mean, it's not the first time the NFL and one of its players has been involved in a scandal like this, and I just think something drastic needs to change with the relationship between the NFL and or agents and the players, because something's clearly wrong. I mean, I read the other day somewhere, I think it was according to last Wednesday, I believe, there had been 35 arrests of NFL players already in 2013. I mean, the grand scheme of things, that's not an awful lot, but I mean, you don't hear about 35 Premier League soccer players getting arrested or 35 of the world's top 100 golfers getting arrested every week. So there's something not quite right there. And in a more general spectrum than this Hernandez case, I think something needs to be done about it big time.
Yeah, and I think some of the comments regarding Hernandez have been quite interesting as well. I mean, Matt Light, he used to be a Patriots tackle. He was actually a really good player. I think he did Pro Bowl a few times. He basically said that he always thought Hernandez, he had his own agenda. And of course, there was someone else, I can't remember who, I think it might have been a player, or maybe it was the commentator or something like that. He basically said with Hernandez, it was almost as though he had an angel on one shoulder and the devil on his other shoulder. So it's quite strange to actually see Hernandez do that. I mean, you know, we're trying to be accused of that. I mean, the interesting thing is, coming out of high school, I believe, and also coming out of college, he was sort of linked with gangs, people saying he had gang ties, etc. But Belichick, the experienced coach he is, I mean, and that front office with Bob Kraft, etc., I mean, I doubt they would take on someone if they thought for one moment he was going to be any trouble. And it seems like, other than this huge incident, he had been pretty quiet, as if he'd turned over a new leaf in his life. So I think for the Patriots it'll be shocking, especially when they've just given him a $41 million contract not so long ago. Yes, I think everyone was shocked, because he wasn't even, I don't believe he was even considered a suspect at all. Just how it all broke.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, as I said, it broke the sort of week before, as most people were aware, it broke the week before he was actually arrested, and the headlines at that time were that Hernandez was being spoken to by police in relation to an incident, really just as a witness, hoping that he'd have some information. Then things just went from one extreme to another, and all of a sudden he was the guy they'd been looking for information on. It does, as I said, it beggars belief. And as I said, it's not the first time the NFL's been involved in something like this. I mean, last year we had the Jovan Belcher incident. We don't need to go into detail about that. I mean, I just want to know when the NFL's going to wake up and realise, as an organisation, it's all very well good suspending players and all that, but when they see that there's players that maybe, I don't want to get into trouble here, but maybe haven't had the best start, or they've been involved in some dodgy things in places, I think there should be some sort of programme for these players to go on to try and get them the straight and narrow, because obviously there's agents as well. Agents probably have a closer relationship to their own players than the teams as such, the franchises. But you've got to question the role of agents as well. I mean, I saw that our friend of the show, agent Rob London, he tweeted that he thought Hernandez's agents were missing. Now, he meant that in the sense that they weren't speaking up at the instant, either backing him or putting him down, whatever it was. But I think missing in more senses than that meaning that Rob London was trying to get across, in the sense that they've obviously not worked very well with him. They know nothing about him. And I think that's shocking that that's been allowed to fester and become and turn into the incident that it has done today.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. And I think, as you say, there should maybe be a programme in place or something like that. Obviously, they all talk about, I mean, a good example, for instance, this week would have been the rookie symposium for the new, sort of newly drafted NFL players. And one of the guys speaking was Adam Pac-Man Jones. Now, I don't know if things like that help, obviously, for rookies coming through. Pac-Man Jones, I mean, I don't think there's many things he's not done. So it's quite, obviously, it seems like he's turned over a new leaf for the great season with the Bengals last year. I can't remember if he's been in jail or anything like that, but he does always seem to be in trouble. So I suppose having guys like that basically warn people off is good. But the thing with Hernandez, for me, the thing that shocked me about the Hernandez situation, after it happened, basically, what was basically said was that he only dealt with his teammates because he had to. He only dealt with his coaches because he had to. the minute sort of the season finished or the minute, you know, practice finished, he just wanted to go home and be with his friends or be alone. Now, that doesn't sound like the type of guy that I'd want to give a contract nearly $50 million to. So I just think there's so many more questions that have to be answered that we'll probably find out in the coming weeks, because it's just, obviously it's easy to sort of rag on the guy now, but why has this never come out before?
I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, I actually hadn't seen that myself. But now you bring it up, I mean, why would you want a guy with that attitude on your team? I don't care how good you are, surely team spirit must count for something. And if that guy's getting in there like that, he must be impossible to work with.
Yeah.
Yet they've slapped that big contract on him, and ultimately it's come back to bite them the backside in the biggest way possible.
I think the one thing you have to watch for, obviously we're reading lots of stories, so I don't want to believe them all. I mean, the other one was involving Wes Welker. Now, a lot of people aren't big fans of Wes Welker, they think he's quite arrogant, but apparently Hernandez basically swore, went crazy at him when, I believe Hernandez asked Welker to help him work the film, and basically they were watching some tape, they wanted to sort of get shown how to properly analyse tape, and I think Welker just told him, I think it was something like, do it yourself, rookie. And the rumours are that Hernandez went crazy, started swearing and shouting and things like that. Now, to be honest, I think a lot of people do that, I think it's usually that. But it just seems sort of weird now when it's all coming out. And I'm sort of, I think the Patriots are going to keep quiet, because I think it's quite interesting that immediately they release him, straight away on NFL.com, it's as if Hernandez had never had any career stats. Then you look at the Patriots basically refunding or exchanging all Hernandez jerseys. Apparently EA Sports have already recognised that he will not be on the next Madden game, even as a free agent. So it's almost as if Hernandez has been wiped from the face of the earth. So I'm not sure if any Patriots players will talk about it. I think it'd be interesting, but what will never happen, guys like Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, just guys like that. It'll be interesting to see if they ever do come in, although I'd imagine they'd be told to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's maybe a cultural difference to what happens over here on an incident like this, if it ever arises, or over in the United States, because I just find it remarkable. It's as if they're just trying to make it look like, he, as you said, he never existed, it never happened. Just put a full stop there, or a period for our American listeners. Full stop there, move on, new chapter, never happened. But you just can't do that. Look at the allegations against this guy. I've got to commend the Patriots on the way they immediately released them. That they couldn't have done anything else at that point other than do it, and I'm glad that they went through with that. But I just feel it's all been too quiet on their part, and I've expected a bit more coming from them, as you said. And I mean, also, pretty much on the same day, it was the same day actually that Hernandez was arrested on these charges. Uzar Walcott, the Cleveland Browns rookie, he happened to be arrested and was on charges of attempted murder on the same day. I mean, I'll use the term again, it beggars belief. That's two players in this organisation on the one day on murder-related charges.
Yeah, and of course, because Hernandez is a higher profile guy, people wouldn't even recognise that that happened to the Browns.
Exactly.
I mean, it's one of those things where I think obviously nowadays the media, you know, that plays a big part. In fact, I think recently I was watching Pardon the Interruption, obviously quite a big programme, well, I was going to say in the States, but a lot of people watching here too, and it was Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, and they were basically saying that obviously Ray Lewis, right, we're not going to say anything bad about him, he has been, we're not proven innocent necessarily, but obviously there wasn't enough evidence, and that sort of just being forgotten about now. But what they said is, in 2000 when that happened, they think that Ray Lewis would have been released had it happened in 2013. So it makes you wonder, would the Patriots have acted differently if something like this with Hernandez happened 10 years ago? I really don't know, but the one thing I find interesting about it, and maybe it's just me, the NFL really haven't said anything. Obviously the Patriots haven't done much, but the NFL, Roger Goodell, just as a whole, the league, the sort of, you know, the figureheads, the head honchos, I just think have been very, very quiet. I expect a lot more. And of course you mentioned the cultural differences. I think in America, obviously they're all about innocent until proven guilty, whereas let's be honest here with the media, in the UK, if someone thinks you've done something, it pretty much follows you around.
You've done it pretty much according to the media here. Yeah.
I don't think it's like that over here. I think it's more sort of, oh no, let's wait until he's proven guilty. And what I also think shocking, and maybe this is just me, when you see certain players or certain fans saying pray for Hernandez, why not pray for the guy that, you know, that's been murdered, whether or not it was Hernandez that done it? Either way, he's involved in the situation, so I don't really think there should be much sympathy for Hernandez right now. It should be for the other guy.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, if you were to switch roles and it was Hernandez that was the victim of this, they'd still be saying pray for Hernandez, simply because he's the guy that's known. And I mean, another thing that shocked me is the fact that you mentioned earlier the Patriots were refunding and exchanging all Hernandez jerseys. Well, I saw today that Hernandez jerseys were actually selling for hundreds of dollars, three-figure sums, and hundreds of pounds here in the UK as well, on eBay. Why? I don't even know what to say, to be honest. I'm just stating the fact. They're going for hundreds.
Hernandez, and I've got to be honest, I think, maybe this is just me, but if you look around right now, if you look at players that have been involved in quite controversial situations, years to come where jerseys do become very valuable, I'm not sure what it says about our world when guys that are accused of bad things become more valuable, but, yeah, I mean, I know it's not probably the best example, but you look at a guy like O.J. Simpson, his jerseys are very, very coveted, and a lot of the time it is just because of the controversial figure he's become.
Yeah, I mean, just the last point I want to make in this whole debacle, I mean, it's just about an article that I saw. I don't know the author, but if he's listening or she's listening, get in touch and we'll credit you. It was that article that you actually led me to on the Bleacher Report website, which basically said why the NFL is and always will be scandal. And there was a bit down near the end of that article which had the subject, the fans don't care. And I'll just of a wee scour about. I mean, it said even a work stoppage between the league and its players didn't take the NFL down. The lockout threatened to take away part of the season, but it didn't. The whole Ray Lewis debacle threatened to do things to it. It still went on. It's more popular than ever. The fact of the matter is, that's probably why the NFL aren't saying anything or doing anything, because they know simply that this will all just die down, they will be able to brush under the carpet, and they will be able to move on. It's unfortunate, and it's quite bizarre looking at it from the outside, but that must be the way they look. They know they'll get by. One player, regardless of what crimes he has been alleged to have committed, the fact of the matter is, that'll all be dealt with, and the league will just go on as ever, and it'll continue to grow in popularity, so hey, what do the NFL have to worry about?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important to realise that normal rules don't apply to athletes. It's like nothing, like, you look around sports right now, it doesn't have to be American football. You imagine you had a friend that wasn't famous, that wasn't a brilliant athlete, but had done the same things that Mike Tyson had done. Would you stay in contact with him? No. Yeah, thousands or millions of people around the world would love to meet Mike Tyson. You could use another boxing example, a guy like Floyd Mayweather in trouble for all sorts. If that was a normal person, would you want to associate with him? No. But because he's an athlete, he's got fans all over the world. It's the same in the NFL. It's, I think athletes just have a set of different rules. And it's crazy, but one of the things I'm actually really looking sort of or interested about, and I suppose looking forward isn't the right word, but I want to see what the Patriots do without Hernandez in terms of, from a playing standpoint. Because when you look at the team, I believe around about 80% of Tom Brady's targets from last season are gone. Les Belfry's favourite receiver, gone. Brandon Lloyd, the supposed deep threat that didn't exist, is gone. Deion Branch, former Super Bowl MVP for the Patriots, gone. And of course Hernandez is gone. There's one or two other guys as well. I mean, I think Brady, I was going to say you can't doubt Brady, I suppose you can, because he's always done it, you know, at the top level. But for the first time in a long time, I'm actually sort of confused as to how the Patriots are going to help develop these young receivers and help Brady sort of, you know, continue his top form, because whether or not you like it, Hernandez was probably a top 5 or 6 tight end in the league, and it wasn't just some nobody in the least. It was a guy who at 23 years old, for all we know, in a year or two could have been went on to be the best tight end. So it's quite, I just have no idea what to expect from Patriots.
And there you go, folks, proof that football does just continue as normal. You don't happen to know any Floyd Mayweather fans, do you, Colin?
I do. I won't confess to you, like, I am one, because I'm a nice person and I don't follow people like that, but you know what? I called Floyd Mayweather out for a fight, and the next day he announced his sort of opponent as Saul Canelo. Alvarez. It also happens to be that it's on my birthday, so I don't think it's a coincidence that with Floyd Mayweather, I call him out the next day, he announces he's going to fight Alvarez, and he makes the one on my birthday because he knows that I won't be available. So, yeah, that's the type of athlete I am.
So just interested if he offered you that fight in the multi-million dollars that go with it, perhaps in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, you would say no, I don't want it because it's my birthday. And that, folks, brings to an end another great edition of the V2 Boxing Podcast with future, I don't know, featherweight champion Colin Lamont. Light featherweight. Bantamweight.
As far as I know, in my way, I would go between
light winterweight and winterweight. Okay, I'll take your word for it. So, anyway, that is actually the end to a rather random end to this week's press coverage on V2, the fastest growing American football podcast in the UK. I'll keep saying that until we are the biggest and best American football podcast in the UK. Big thanks to Tom Melton for joining us earlier. Really enjoyed the chat with him. Good banter, good football talk, and the guy certainly knows what he's talking about, and we look forward to welcoming him back on the show again sometime. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at PressCoverageV2. Colin will love for you to follow him on Twitter at CLamontSport, and if you really want to read some ridiculous and boring tweets, then you'll get me at Jonathan J. Moore. Don't forget to keep checking in at v2journal.com, not only the American football section, but we've got lots of stuff across the board there, and you'll also find the link to our iTunes page if you want to listen that way. So it's been great to be back in the show after I managed to miss a week because of other things, but I've been back, and I hope you've liked the fact I've been back. You probably didn't, but I'm back nonetheless. And after that waffling, all that is left for Colin to say is,
I'm coming for you, Floyd.
And
goodbye.
Goodbye. See you next week.